Welcome to a statewide public radio call-in special, The Storming of the U.S. Capitol. Good evening, I'm Larry Mantle of NPR member station KPCC in Los Angeles. We're joined by public radio stations throughout California, as well as our friends and colleagues at Minnesota Public Radio and all the listeners in Minnesota. We're also going to be hearing on the course of this program from experts in a variety of fields, including government and security issues. Reporters will be joining us as well to talk about the very dark day in Washington, D.C., in which a mob of pro-Trump supporters attacked the U.S. Capitol building, gained entrance to the building, including to the Senate chambers and to offices of members of the House of Representatives. We still don't have details on the number of people who breached the building. We do know that one woman was shot and died of her injuries. We don't yet have a confirmed identity on that woman. Several Capitol police officers were also injured in the attack today. Once the building was cleared and secured, the Senate reconvened 2 hours ago with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
The United States and the United States Congress have faced down much greater threats than the unhinged crowd we saw today. We've never been deterred before, and will be not deterred today. They tried to disrupt our democracy. They failed. They failed. They failed to attempt to obstruct the Congress. This failed insurrection only underscores how crucial the task before us is for our republic.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, again, we welcome your calls, or you can tweet using @AirTalk as a way to bring our attention to your tweet. Let us know what ways you think the country can move forward in the wake of today's events in Washington, D.C. Now, Republicans who had been calling for a 10-day delay in formally counting electoral votes appear for the most part to have dropped that push. The Senate right now is in the process of voting on the objection to Arizona's electoral vote. We'll bring that result to you just as soon as we have it. It's expected that a joint session of Congress will take place later tonight to hear the electoral votes on a state-by-state basis. Joining us from Washington, D.C. to talk about the very latest that's going on there after the mayor of D.C. instituted a curfew at 6 o'clock D.C. time is Debbie Truong, reporter for NPR member station WAMU in Washington, D.C. Debbie, thank you very much for being with us. Please describe the scene right now in the nation's capital.
Thanks for having me. So I left the Capitol about an hour or so ago, and by the time that I had left, things that had sort of calmed down. I started my day at the Capitol around 4 p.m. Eastern time, and at that point, you know, it was a very chaotic scene. There were hundreds, if not thousands, of pro-Trump supporters outside of the Capitol shouting things like "Fight for Trump," "We the People," and, you know, police were really trying to get a handle on the crowd. They used things like flashbangs and tear gas on the protesters. As the night sort of wore on, we saw a much larger police presence that eventually vastly outnumbered the protesters. And they pushed the protesters further and further away from the U.S. Capitol down the lawn onto Pennsylvania Avenue. And that really sort of dispersed a lot of the crowd. By the time that I left, there were maybe a couple of dozen protesters left.
So many questions about the response of the Capitol Police. Were they not anticipating violence, or that at least a portion of the crowd would attempt entry to the building? Were they completely caught flat-footed by this?
I don't know if they were caught completely flat-footed yesterday or a couple of days ago. You know, the D.C. mayor and other local authorities, you know, advised D.C. residents to stay home. There were two other pro-Trump rallies held after the election, and, you know, we saw violence break out during those protests. There were a few stabbings at the last one. And so, you know, I think that there was some anticipation for violence, but I don't know that they were expecting what we saw today, which was this violent insurrection.
Once the police got reinforcements, where did those come from? Surrounding law enforcement agencies, or were National Guard troops arriving?
Yeah, so the governors in Maryland and Virginia deployed some of their law enforcement authorities into D.C. There were some National Guardsmen. There were police from surrounding local county jurisdictions. And, you know, when I was last outside of the Capitol, seeing, you know, police push the protesters further back, I saw, you know, police officers or officers wearing FBI vests. So they were there as well.
President Trump tweeted out a video message in which he talked about what he said was the stolen election and that there was widespread fraud. He also called for people to go home. Is there any sense that the people that were out at the steps of the U.S. Capitol heeded what the president had to say? Were they paying any attention to that at all?
Sure. I mean, I think there was a mix. You know, I talked to a couple of protesters right before the 6 p.m. curfew who said that they intended to comply with the curfew, you know, but I was out there up until 7:30 and 8. And, you know, there were still crowds still out there, you know, yelling antagonistic things toward police. And so I think it was really sort of a mixed bag in terms of people listening versus not.
Thank you so much for being with us, Debbie. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you for having me.
Debbie Truong with us from NPR member station WAMU in Washington, D.C. The Senate has rejected the objection to the Arizona electoral vote. So we would anticipate that coming up a little bit later this evening, there will be a joint session of Congress. We'll see what happens as the roll call of the electoral votes continues on a state-by-state basis. But joining us now is KPCC politics reporter Libby Dankman, who's been reaching out to California members of Congress to find out what they've gone through with this morning's attack on the U.S. Capitol. Libby, who did you have a chance to talk with?
I talked to a number of California members, Larry, who spent the day really cowering in either their offices or in undisclosed locations, barricading themselves in the House gallery, different places where they ended up getting caught when this mob of extremists stormed the Capitol. Ted Lieu was one such member who had to evacuate his Cannon House office building when the protests were really reaching a fever pitch. The number of House buildings were evacuated. And he said, you know, he served on active duty in the U.S. military because he believes that this is the most amazing country in the world. And he just never thought he would see a day like this. And I heard that over and over again, a lot of shock, a lot of sadness from members. Nanette Barragán, who represents parts of Long Beach, Carson and Compton, said that she was still in her office when I spoke with her, unable to leave. The Capitol Police had let her know that it was not safe to leave yet. And she said it was frankly scary that she was still trying to keep an eye out to see what was going on in the street outside. But she added that the House members could not be intimidated from doing their work. And it was universal that the members of the House that I talked to wanted to get back and wanted to certify this election tonight. They did not want to delay because they felt that any delay would give protesters, give extremists, I should say, more chance to derail the process of declaring Joe Biden as the presidential election winner. Representative Jimmy Gomez had the most harrowing story. He represents East and Northeast LA, Larry, and he told me about hiding in the House gallery with a number of other members of Congress and the media. Now, the House gallery is on the second floor above the floor of the House, and he describes this scene of seeing police trying to keep protesters out of the gallery and out of the House floor. Take a listen.
And I could see the police moving the desk, moving this big red bench to barricade. And we heard them breaking windows, trying to get in. I looked up a little bit, but we were just trying to keep our heads down just in case any shooting started. You hear glass breaking and you hear people yelling and you hear just this buzzing of these gas masks. And it's just a surreal experience.
And Larry, they were using gas masks. All the members had them under their seats, and they also had them in the offices as an emergency kit because there was some gas being used to disperse the crowds in the halls outside that were breaking the windows, trying to get in and eventually successful in getting into the House and Senate floor. And Gomez said, Representative Gomez told me that he grew up in an area where he heard gunfire, and he used to run from gunfire when he was younger, and he has never been so scared because he couldn't run in this situation. They were pinned in the House gallery and just waiting for Capitol Police to be able to get them out of that very scary situation.
KPCC politics reporter Libby Dankman is with us this hour. We want to hear from you wherever you're listening throughout California on KQED San Francisco, throughout the Bay Area and other parts of Northern California, KPBS San Diego, Capitol Public Radio in the greater Sacramento area, those listening on Minnesota Public Radio throughout the state as well. We invite you to call with your thoughts about what happened today, your thoughts about the future of the country, where we go from here. We're at 866-893-5722, 866-893-5722. Let's talk with Johnny in Pasadena, listening to KPCC. Johnny, quickly, your point, please.
Yeah, well, I just thought the combination of the losses in the Senate races in Georgia, as well as the events of today, hopefully are a sign to Republicans that this is the end of the Trump movement and not the beginning. That was kind of my thought, and hopefully the beginning of a time to heal.
Johnny, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. And certainly when we saw the senators who came back to convene this evening after the terrible events of earlier today, a very different tone that we heard in the Senate chambers. We'll continue our live statewide hour-long call-in program throughout California as well as Minnesota. Once again, we'd like to hear from you, your observations. Johnny, getting us started, 866-893-5722. We'll continue in 1 minute. This is a statewide public radio call-in special, The Storming of the U.S. Capitol. I'm Larry Mantle of NPR member station KPCC in Los Angeles, joined by KPCC politics reporter Libby Dankman, and most importantly, by listeners to hear their thoughts about this day in Washington, in which a mob of pro-Trump supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol building, getting into violent skirmishes with Capitol Police officers. One woman was shot and succumbed to her injuries. We don't yet have confirmation of her identity. Several Capitol Police officers were injured, at least one of them hospitalized. And for a time, members of the House of Representatives and U.S. senators evacuated from the building over fears for their personal safety. We're asking you to weigh in on this day, a very dark day in this country. Your thoughts about what we saw, where the country goes from here, and how you make any sense whatsoever in such a dramatic event in our nation's capital. 866-893-5722, 866-893-5722 is the number to call us and be part of this statewide call-in program. Now, here in Los Angeles, from where I'm broadcasting at KPCC, the Los Angeles Police Department announced they arrested six people today at a downtown Los Angeles protest, that just one of many others taking place outside of the nation's capital. With us is KQED government and politics reporter Katie Orr, who's based in Sacramento. Katie, thank you for joining us this evening. What was going on with protests in Sacramento today?
Right, Larry. Thanks for having me. I got to downtown Sacramento just outside the state capitol around 11 o'clock today and immediately saw a fairly large group of Proud Boys. They are an alt-right group that oftentimes can get violent. And in these protests, they've been having a couple for the past several weeks in Sacramento that have resulted in violence and in arrests. There were several hundred people there for a rally in support of President Trump. They had signs saying things like "Stop the Steal." They had Trump flags, American flags. There was a heavy, heavy police presence. The police were in, you know, their riot gear. They had the Capitol fenced off. It really looked like it could be a dangerous, volatile situation. However, after several, a couple hours, everyone kind of just went home. It had started to rain a little bit. Perhaps they felt they weren't, you know, really going to accomplish much. And the protest broke up, thankfully.
All right, Katie, thank you so much for describing the scene in Sacramento earlier today with the pro-Trump protest that took place. KQED government and politics reporter Katie Orr, who reports from Sacramento. Let's talk with more of our listeners on this special statewide call-in program. Let's talk with Kimberly in the Marin County city of San Rafael, listening to KQED. Kimberly, thank you for being with us. Your thoughts about today?
Thank you. Yes, as a longtime political activist, I was shocked that on the campaign trail in 2016, Trump already incited violence. He told people, go beat up if you don't like their views and I'll pay your legal fees. And throughout this campaign, I've written to my representatives about this. This man is mentally ill. He's demonstrably mentally ill. Hundreds of people have verified that with letters. And then I wrote to the New York Times after the election and said, why aren't you calling this what it is, which is sedition? I looked up the definition. I said, Trump is committing a form of treason. Sedition is inciting rebellion against the rule of law. I called the New York Times tips. I wrote to them and I said, why aren't you calling this what it is? So we need to confront that this is sedition. Joe Biden first today said this is close to sedition. It is sedition. And all of the GOP that are in collusion with that need to be held accountable for this.
Kimberly, I appreciate your call. That's Kimberly listening to KQED. And let's listen to what President-elect Joe Biden said earlier today during the height of the occupation of the U.S. Capitol building by the Trump extremists. This Joe Biden from earlier.
I call on President Trump to go on national television now to fulfill his oath and defend the Constitution and demand an end to this siege, to storm the Capitol, to smash windows, to occupy offices, the floor of the United States Senate, rummaging through desks, on the Capitol, on the House of Representatives, threatening the safety of duly elected officials. It's not protest. It's insurrection. The world's watching. Like so many other Americans, I am genuinely shocked and saddened that our nation, so long the beacon of light and hope for democracy, has come to such a dark moment.
President-elect Joe Biden earlier today. Let's talk with Stephen, joining us from Martinez, listening to KQED. Stephen, go right ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I believe, truly believe, that healing in this country will only happen when those responsible for encouraging this kind of behavior are held accountable. I think back to quotes I've heard today of people saying, remember when there were tanks in the streets for the Black Lives Matter protests, and now we have people storming the Capitol. It's preposterous. It needs to be called what it is. It's domestic terrorism. It's sedition. It's treason. It needs to be said, and people need to be held accountable.
Stephen, I appreciate it. Listening to KQED on our statewide call-in program during this hour, Maggie in Minneapolis says, there's a blatant example of white privilege with the pro-Trump crowd today at the Capitol. I saw how the police treated BLM activists in Minneapolis, and there's a definite double standard when it comes to the police handling of the D.C. insurrectionists. 866-893-5722, 866-893-5722. Let's talk with Mark in Redwood City in the Bay Area, listening to KQED. Mark, go ahead, please.
I'm a center-right independent in California, and I'm very unhappy with one-party rule And I feel that the Democrat one-party rule is taking over the entire country. So I do have some sympathy for the 71 million voters who feel they were disenfranchised or disenchanted with the outcome of the election. I never liked Trump. I see him as a narcissistic wacko, frankly. But there is a problem, and we need to deal with it, how these people feel. And it's not about racism and misogyny for most of them. And when people keep repeating that, they're doing damage to democracy also.
What about, and this is something that we've heard from even Republican members of the Senate who've been highly critical of what happened today with the assault on the U.S. Capitol. Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky said that to undertake a 10-day review, as Texas Senator Ted Cruz is calling for and leading the group of Republican senators who want that to take place, that is undermining the Electoral College, which is explicitly of benefit to Republicans by representing less dense parts of the country with higher Republican registration. And his argument was this was self-defeating for Republicans to do anything that calls the Electoral College into question. Your thoughts on that, Mark?
Go ahead and complete the process and put Biden in the White House, but that they can go ahead and have that kind of a more academic review to give something to these disaffected voters.
All right, Mark, I appreciate it. 866-893-5722. That's 866-893-5722. You can tweet at AirTalk. That's one word, AIRTALK. We also have an AirTalk page, which is our Los Angeles program, our public affairs show. You can post on the Facebook page there, and we can share your comment with listeners. Jacqueline tweets, I'm listening on Cap Radio. This day is surreal and yet was not unexpected. We knew Donald Trump would do damage on his way out. What does he have to do to be removed, charged with inciting sedition, and arrested? This took the focus off the Democratic flip in Georgia. So pathetic. That's Jacqueline tweeting at AirTalk. Sam tweets at AirTalk, this is the culmination of years of the Tim McVeigh, Alex Jones, Rush Limbaugh faction being dismissed as a temporary phenomenon. In the meantime, sales of weapons have grown unregulated. It's far from over. Again, you can tweet at AirTalk or post on our AirTalk Facebook page, 866-893-5722. Annabelle, listening to KPCC in Fullerton. Good to have you with us on our statewide call-in program.
Hi, thank you for having me. Along with many other Americans, I'm mortified at what happened today. But this is not an isolated incident. This is not something that is new to the way that we've been seeing people behave in the last 4 years, and especially the last year. And it's nothing more than a wake-up call that this is not the way that our system should be. This is not the way that America represents itself, and it's saddening, but it's not going to stop with the way that people are behaving now. People need to, it just really proves that hateful people will do anything they can to get their point across, and it's just so important for us to stand up for each other and stand up for what's right. And it doesn't come down to a two-party system. It comes down to looking out for every other person, our brothers and our sisters with us every day. And it's just very saddening.
How, Annabelle, how do you think we move forward?
You know, we have to start. Every baby step is a step closer in the better direction. Being better every day, being stronger for each other, sharing love, sharing compassion, and letting each other know that we are here for them, and, you know, supporting our people of color that have been oppressed for so many years, supporting them in every way possible, because this saying that we have to support each other. We just have to.
Annabelle, thank you. That's Annabelle listening to KPCC from Fullerton in Orange County. Hope listening to KQED in Piedmont says this should be called what it is, terrorism and sedition. I'm all for reconciliation, but I find it surprising that there's renewed call for bipartisanship when Republicans just lost the Senate and the president lost. Where was all this talk when Hillary lost? Joining us now is Ange Marie Hancock Alfaro, professor of political science and the chair of University of Southern California's Department of Political Science and International Relations. Professor Hancock Alfaro, it's good to have you with us on our statewide call-in program. Your thoughts on what we all witnessed earlier today at the U.S. Capitol?
Thank you, Larry. I think many of your callers are kind of properly characterizing it. This is more than just, you know, kind of protest or First Amendment speech. I think the day started out that way, but certainly the framing that this was insurrection, that this was sedition, is unfortunately what we saw today when we saw the storming of the Capitol to interrupt the final step in the peaceful transition of power that we've had for 58 other electoral processes in our nation's history.
The House is voting right now on the objection that was lodged this morning to Arizona's electoral vote. It was defeated by a huge margin in the Senate just a few minutes ago. It's expected that it's going to go down in defeat right now in the House. Do you anticipate that we're going to see the Senate and the House come back together in a joint session tonight and take this state by state and do it more typically as we've seen in years past?
Well, I do think that they will be coming back together after the, as you said, the objection is voted down in the House. There have been signals in the Senate that there will be another objection. Senator Josh Hawley has said in his speech earlier during the Arizona debate that he does intend to still lodge his objection for Pennsylvania. So that we will see them come together, but we may have to have this be an all-night kind of session for both houses of Congress.
All right. We're talking with USC professor and chair of the Department of Political Science and International Relations, Ange Marie Hancock Alfaro. What sort of challenge now does this present with President Trump continuing with the daily litany of the claim that the election was stolen from him and that he won by a wide margin? What is the potential for where his fellow Republicans go at this point?
Well, I think, you know, we really are seeing the split in the GOP. Certainly there are many, including those who voted overwhelmingly to reject the objection just now, who feel like this cannot stand. And Senator Mitt Romney delivered a speech just a couple of hours ago to that effect. Certainly, though, there is a persistent minority that wants to continue this. I doubt, though, that they're continuing it for President Trump's sake. I think he is more of an effective tool for them to launch their own careers. But that does not give much comfort to, I think, all Americans who are kind of watching this go on right now.
Professor, thank you for joining us. We appreciate you sharing your observations about today's events and the attack on the U.S. Capitol in Washington. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ange Marie Hancock Alfaro joining us on this statewide call-in program. We have listeners in Ventura County joining us as well on KCLU. We're pleased to have listeners throughout San Diego County listening to KPBS in the greater San Francisco Bay Area and other parts of Northern California on KQED, the greater Sacramento area listening to Capital Public Radio, and we have listeners as well throughout the state of Minnesota listening through our sister broadcasting entity, Minnesota Public Radio. Alex in Hawthorne says, I'm a conservative. What's crazy with what just happened is that on the social media platform Parler, they were saying this was fake and done by BLM and Antifa. Half my friends think this was fake. And the thing is that with COVID, A lot of people have lost their jobs. They're ticked off. I don't think this is just going to go away. The anger is just going to grow. That's Alex in Hawthorne listening on KPCC. Bill in Silver Lake area of Los Angeles listening on KPCC says, these protesters are obviously in pain and misunderstood. It was an awful, disrespectful display, but I also think we have to think about these people who don't believe media. They're in pain. What will we do about it? Well, Bill, the question is, if they don't believe the truth, if they believe that there is a cabal that has hijacked the election and that at every turn has seized American democracy, how do you prove the negative? How do you go back against people who are deeply entrenched in that, regardless of the depth of their pain or of their addiction? We're taking your calls at 866-893-5722 on our statewide call-in program. Frank in Marina Del Rey, I have time, just about 30 seconds for your quick comments, sir, listening on KPCC.
Sure. Yeah. Hi. I just want to, first, I don't want in any way, shape, or form excuse what happened today, and the people involved ought to be prosecuted, ought to be taken to justice. But on the other hand, I think, and some of your earlier points that callers made tie into this as well, there's a seething rage in a big chunk of our country, and part of that 73 million that did vote for Trump, that I don't think we or the political institutions of the country are addressing. We've got the opioid crisis. We've got the average life expectancy for whites, and particularly white males in much of the country, declining for the first time in our history or the first time in the developed world. And we've got a loss of manufacturing and other good-paying jobs. And I think we need to look at the root causes of such fierce rage that people like Trump and that organizations in the social media world take advantage of to amp up into these types of protests. We need to
Frank, I appreciate your call. I need to take a break. We'll continue with our statewide call-in program as we hear from Californians back in a minute. This is a statewide public radio call-in special, The Storming of the U.S. Capitol. Good evening. I'm Larry Mantle of NPR member station KPCC in Los Angeles. We're joined by listeners throughout California, in the San Francisco Bay Area, San Diego, Ventura County, and the greater Sacramento area. Listeners as well throughout the state of Minnesota on Minnesota Public Radio. We're taking your calls for your reactions, and we'd of course love to hear from Minnesotans as well as Californians on this. We're at 866-893-5722. We're taking your input on the disturbing events of the day in which a mob of pro-Trump supporters battled Capitol Police, gained entrance to the U.S. Capitol building, and took over the chambers of the U.S. Senate and also offices of House members such as Speaker Nancy Pelosi. The building cleared, the building declared safe. The senators and House representatives came back where they have been debating the objection to Arizona's electoral vote. That is what caused the joint session to break into separate sessions earlier today. Once they're through with that, it's expected the joint session will convene. We have other listener comments to share. Teja in Davis in the greater Sacramento area, listening on Capitol Public Radio, said it was shocking to see the lack of preparedness for this. Even more shocking were the people who did this. I think they were just trying to make a statement. I think one of the senators was saying we have to think of other people as our neighbors and reach out to each other. And I believe that. I have family that voted for Trump and we still love each other. We all agree this was uncalled for. There is no place for violence in this country. Joining us, KPCC politics reporter Libby Denkman, who has been closely monitoring California members of Congress and their response to the events of the day. We were talking, Libby, before our break about disinformation on social media. You have a prime example?
Right. Just a few minutes ago on the House floor during these oral comments that members are making, Matt Gaetz from Florida made the case that many of the people who stormed the Capitol today were actually not Trump supporters, that they were Antifa members in disguise trying to stir up trouble. And this was just right in line with what that listener had commented about messaging on social media platforms and conservative outlets and Parler trying to make this case that somehow the people who were breaking through doors and windows and threatening members of Congress today were not actually supporting President Trump. And of course, we don't have any proof of that, but the messaging is certainly out there.
Well, and we are presumably at some point going to know, because in clearing the Capitol building, we assume that there were individuals that were arrested, and we're going to learn more about their backgrounds, their social media trail, and other things. So it's just shocking that a member of the House of Representatives would make this claim about Antifa supporters are the ones that carried out the insurrection.
But you're seeing that kind of misinformation just being repeated over and over again in the House, Larry. And it's not something on the Senate side that's continuing, at least not to a great degree, because as you reported before, the Senate voted against the challenge in Arizona, and a number of senators who even had initially supported the challenge after the violence today decided to back off. You only saw 6 Republican senators vote for that challenge. But in the House, there is still a very large contingent of Republicans who are repeating debunked conspiracy theories on the House floor, things like undocumented immigrants voting, as many as 1 million of them swaying the election for Joe Biden. I mean, these are elected members of Congress who are repeating these lies that have been rejected by dozens of courts, by 90 judges, including those who were appointed by President Trump. So it is something that is still echoing around in the media and from elected officials.
KPCC politics reporter Libby Denkman joining us on our statewide call-in program. I'm Larry Mantle of NPR member station KPCC. With me now, associate director for the Center on Extremism at the Anti-Defamation League, Joanna Mendelson. Ms. Mendelson, thank you for being with us. We've had some listeners talk about the disaffection, even addiction, the declining standard of living of the working class whites that President Trump has been able to appeal to. What can you tell us about the composition of the people who gathered to protest and the people who stormed the building?
Thank you so much for having me, Steve. So essentially, it runs the gamut as to who was drawn to today's protest, and even last night as well, as we saw kind of a pre-event in Washington, D.C. There are many who feel disaffected. They feel that the election has been taken from them with these unsubstantiated claims. But what we saw was an extreme wing of the pro-Trump movement who not only took the energy, but the anger and the ire at the situation at the national landscape and stormed the Capitol. Although we've identified over a dozen individuals who are linked to extremist groups, whether or not it was the Proud Boys or white supremacist organizations like the New Jersey European Heritage Association or members of the Groyper Army and other white supremacists like Nick Fuentes, we saw an overwhelming majority of them not linked to a clear extremist movement, but certainly their actions illuminate this very, very kind of extremist behavior.
What was happening on social media leading up to this? Was it clear that that there was violence contemplated?
Absolutely. So ADL has said time and time again that extremists need to be taken at their word. And what we saw was that there was a volatile rhetoric online that we saw not only in the fringe, but the fringe often bleeds into the mainstream. As Libby mentioned, that the rhetoric that we're seeing from our representatives is echoed by these extremists and their ability to mobilize, to weaponize, and to organize online with a propaganda campaign, with memes, with chats and platforms dedicated to this ideology is certainly notable. And so what we saw is a call for violence, a call for action, a call for a destruction of the system, the sense of abandonment, of loss, of fraud, and the nefarious forces that they believe are operating that that are blamed for the results of the election.
Thank you so much, Joanna Mendelson of the Anti-Defamation League, Associate Director for the Center on Extremism at the ADL, for being with us. Let me share some more listener comments. And again, we're taking your calls at 866-893-5722. You're listening to a special live statewide call-in program here in California, also being listened to throughout Minnesota on Minnesota Public Radio. 866-893-5722. Julie in Middletown in Lake County, listening on KQED, says, I think there's a danger in Trump being in the White House until inauguration. And I think that Vice President Pence needs to speak up and GOP politicians need to do more. Francis in Mid-City, Los Angeles, listening on KPCC, says, and this repeats an earlier comment, this is a blatant example of white privilege with the pro-Trump crowd today at the Capitol. I saw how the police responded elsewhere. There's a double standard. And Francis wants to respond to the earlier caller saying that this really isn't about racial issues. Francis says black Americans have suffered more and far worse than white Americans, but they have not lashed out in the same way. Again, you can tweet at AirTalk. That is what we're using as the way of bringing together all of the tweets, AIRTAL. We also have an AirTalk page on Facebook where you can post as well. By the way, speaking of Facebook, Twitter and Facebook have both suspended the accounts of President Trump for the next 12 hours because of the rhetoric included in his tweets, two of which were removed. Joining us now is security expert Hal Kempfer, CEO of Global Risk Intelligence and Planning. He's retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel who consults with a number of organizations on security. Hal, it's good to have you with us this evening. How could the Capitol Police have been so unprepared to deal with a violent crowd?
Larry, that's probably the biggest question out there. Obviously, their threat assessment system or process just didn't make it. And frankly, with so much out there that was open source, I was a little bit surprised with how underprepared they were. When you saw the protester breachers, if you will, going into the Capitol building, I would have expected they'd have tactical units standing by, you know, kind of out of sight, which would be normal. And they weren't there. And they had not really substantially increased the checkpoints, the manning at the checkpoints. Frankly, what they did have was very insufficient for what they faced. And frankly, I don't know. That's an area that has protests all the time, so it's a
and much larger than this.
Yeah, it's a normal thing back there. As the chief of Metro said today, First Amendment expression in the Washington, D.C. region is a pretty common occurrence. And I know Metro has at least three specialized civil disturbance units that are set up to do that. So why request them proactively to be standing by is something of a surprise.
In Los Angeles and other cities that saw protests turn into conflict with law enforcement officers, we saw foam projectiles, so-called less lethal means of crowd control that were used, although there were some serious injuries caused by those projectiles. We saw that batons were used in crowd control. We haven't seen all the video, of course, and we haven't heard all the accounts of what happened in these face-offs between Capitol Police and the mob that was breaking into the building. But did it seem to you like they were equipped with the same tools that local police have to deal with confrontations in their cities?
Some of the same tools. I don't know if they had all the same tools. And And I don't know if the Capitol Police are necessarily equipped with all the same tools. But what I didn't see was tactical units, you know, the shields, the helmets, the tactical dress uniforms, if you will, that they use for those types of events. What I saw was standard wear. I saw batons and have heard about the use of
tear gas, right?
Tear gas, yeah. I was going to say CS. That's a military term. But was used within the Capitol building. So there was some use of those tools, if you will. But frankly, they seemed to have been pretty much caught off guard.
We've heard from a number of listeners who see this as police responding very differently than what they would have if they were dealing with an African-American crowd of people that had gathered to protest and were ready to storm the building. Do you think race plays a role played a role in how law enforcement responded to this today?
Well, I would say that's certainly something that's worth discussion. But the other thing is, it's Washington, D.C., if you've lived back there, spent time back there, you know that they have these sorts of events occurring all the time. And frankly, as cities go, they don't get too excited about a lot of this because they have protests around the Capitol, in around the Capitol, and at other buildings in town all the time.
So are you saying they were complacent because they have protests so frequently that they just under-projected what was going to happen?
I don't want to say they got a business as usual mentality, but they definitely were underprepared for this one. And what it really boiled down to is the threat assessment process, which is very delicate on things like this because you're dealing with a First Amendment protected activity. At the same time, you're also trying to see if there's assess the threat, and you're trying to collect information and intelligence to see if there's a credible threat on buildings or people. You can imagine the politics at play behind the scenes when you talk about intelligence collection here in the U.S., and particularly with First Amendment activities like this.
All right, Hal, you're breaking up a little bit, but I appreciate your being with us. That's Hal Kempfer, CEO of Global Risk Intelligence and Planning. Let's take another listener call. This is Ian in Brentwood, listening to KPCC in Los Angeles. Ian, your observation about the day.
Thank you. I want to make three points.
Briefly.
When you look at history, Kaczynski, Orban, Erdogan, Mussolini, none of these people came to power by military coup. They were democratically elected. Once in office, they undermined the institutions. That's what happened today. Two, Biden needs to stand up. It's time for President-elect Biden to give a speech, Ich bin ein Berliner, or Mr. President, tear down this wall. He needs to speak up very forcefully. This cannot continue. Three, if nothing happens vis-a-vis Trump, either the 25th Amendment or trial for sedition, it will just go underground, and in 4 years, you will have a much worse situation.
Ian, I appreciate your call. Thank you. Let's take another call. This comes from John, listening in St. Paul, Minnesota, to Minnesota Public Radio. John, go ahead, please.
Hey, Larry, listen, real quick. I lost my friend. My best friend was Philando Castile, who was murdered here in St. Anthony, Minnesota. We protest here in Minnesota, and then we protest the killing of George Floyd. Totally different response. We were called Antifa. We were called Black Lives Matter terrorists, domestic terrorists. And the only thing we were protesting was police-involved killings of African-American men, right? Here today, we've seen the real domestic terrorists, the real Antifa. There were no tear gas canisters shot like they were shot at us. No rubber bullets were shot like they were shot at us here in St. Paul or any other time that someone protests police-involved killings. It's like, how dare you protest my brother? Is the response we get from police officers when we stand up and say we're tired of police-involved killings. Today we saw the real Antifa. Today we saw the real domestic terrorists, and we saw how the police respond a little bit differently to Black lives when they're trying to say that Black lives really do matter. I guess if you're white, you're right, and if you're Black, you're wrong. And that's exactly how the African-American families feel here today. throughout the entire United States. America's shown its face today. The real patriots are the real terrorists here in the United States of America. And anytime you protest police violence, you'll be met with tear gas, rubber bullets, mace canisters, and police presence that's out of this world. National Guards, you can't say they didn't prepare, right? They weren't prepared. What we saw today was police protecting their brothers. And Donald Trump could have secured the Capitol just like that if he wanted to.
John, I appreciate your call from St. Paul, Minnesota. Thank you very much for being with us. Karina in Pasadena, listening to KPCC, says, I think this is a show of white supremacy in action. This is all about race. These extremists came to scare people. I hope this brings us to another point of reckoning with not only race, but social media. And Shelley, listening in Foster City, listening to KQED, says, I want to call out the cowardice today after riling up his supporters. Now the president is hiding behind his keyboard. There's so much cowardice. That's Shelley listening to KQED in Foster City in the Bay Area. I want to thank those of you that called in or tweeted your comments to us on this special statewide call-in program. We appreciate your being a part of our conversation. Also want to thank the NPR member stations who picked up our broadcast live this evening, including CAP Public Radio Sacramento, KQED San Francisco, KPBS San Diego, KCLU in Thousand Oaks, KPCC in Los Angeles, and Minnesota Public Radio as well. I'm Larry Mantle of NPR member station KPCC, was joined by KPCC politics reporter Libby Dankman as well. We wish you a very good evening.